Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Man, you're going to need that commitment today because today is going to be an extra special day. I titled the episode Back the Blue Bandwagon because I feel like all of a sudden some Democrats who really could have made a difference in 2020 when it came to the complete downfall of policing and the exodus of officers from Seattle, which has contributed to our crime crisis. I feel like all of a sudden those Democrats who were very, very quiet back then are all of a sudden the biggest fans of law enforcement. So we'll dive into that on the show today. Also coming up later, there is a really odd effort to rehab Portland's reputation, and some of the local media in Portland is just lapping it up, hook, line, and sinker. Later on, my sister will join us for Florida Report, yet another example of a bill being introduced in Florida when it comes to gender identity that is the absolute antithesis of what's going on in the state of Washington. Later on in the show, if you're listening to us live, watching us live, we'll take your questions. And then I got a lot of angry tweets from probably leftists, but about the fact that I keep harping on Bob Ferguson for having an exploratory campaign. And I'm going to reiterate why I think that is newsworthy. And just a tease to our Sundays with subscribers, it's an exclusive weekly show we do every Sunday. You know who our guest is this week? It's Andrew Yang in the flesh. 2020 presidential candidate Andrew Yang will be here for Sundays with subscribers. So if you're not a subscriber, it's a great week to become one. You can just sign up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com to hear my conversation with Andrew Yang. I'm sure we will commiserate over our shared dislike for the two-party system. So I'm looking forward to that. All right, let's get to our top story of the day today. Governor Jay Inslee was in Pasco, Washington yesterday. And he was there to do a couple things. One was the opening of a regional training facility for law enforcement, which is great. Love it. We need it 100%. No issue with that. But while he was there, he signed another law enforcement related bill. Any guesses? Any guesses? It was the bill on police pursuits, the bill that all of us worked so hard to get them to do something on. I'm not happy with the final product, but the bill as signed yesterday by the governor will give a little bit of power back to law enforcement to pursue potentially dangerous criminals. Here's the governor signing it.
Today, I will be signing Senate Bill 5352. This bill gives peace officers more discretion to determine whether to engage in a vehicular pursuit. I want to take a moment to comment on the path that this legislation took to my desk. A couple years ago, the legislature passed some laws, and I signed, that changed some of our conditions for vehicular pursuits in the state of Washington. Like in many things, we learned from experience about how that law would actually be implemented in the field. After learning from the experience, the legislature calibrated the decision in a way that I think is very reasonable and very appropriate, which eased the burden on officers to allow them to do more pursuits where appropriate, and also add to the number of crimes where those pursuits would be appropriate, including domestic violence, assault, and vehicular assault offenses. I know some would consider further discussion is merited. The only thing I will say about this is when you climb Mount Everest, you don't do it in one giant leap. You do it step by step. I believe this is a step forward in a reasonable measure of a reasonable balance to assure public safety in its multiple ways. And I thank the officers for being willing to act professionally in very dangerous circumstances when they make these decisions.
Look, okay, I'm going to get to my issues with what the governor, some of what the governor is saying there, but I had to point out, it wouldn't be the governor's. Hi, Nicole, by the way. I didn't even say hi to you today. Hello.
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I didn't ask how you were. I said hi.
Well, okay.
How are you, Nicole?
Hey, good. I'm doing well. How are you, Brandi?
Good. I love that you pulled this next clip. I'll play it momentarily because it just would not be a press conference from the governor without a super awkward joke that no one laughs
at. And this is a good one.
This is a good one. Okay,
do you want nothing out of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to play it?
I do.
I want to thank the legislators who had the foresight to do this particularly John Lovick, whose leadership has been absolutely fantastic. Now, that's what you get from the Washington State Patrol, which I would say is the finest law enforcement outfit. Sorry, guys. You're supposed to laugh at that, but in any event.
Nothing like telling people to laugh at your joke, but also just, he's so awkward. I think from another person, that joke could have come out funny.
Maybe, but that was, I mean, you're with a bunch of cops. Why?
I don't know. He's like, oh, the state patrol is the best. He is the governor, so that is the law enforcement agency he's in charge of. But he's just such an awkward man.
I know.
I will note, before I talk about my frustration with, again, Governor Inslee and others just jumping on the, oh, support the law enforcement bandwagon. He mentioned John Lovick there. I thought it was really nice. Can I say this?
Yeah.
John Lovick invited me to the bill signing with him.
I know.
Isn't that nice?
So
of course,
sweet.
John Lovick, a Democrat, he was in and talked about it. He gave us a lot of credit for pushing Democrats or highly encouraging them to do something with police pursuits. And so I got a call from John Lovick, and he not only invited me out to the bill signing in Pasco, he said I could ride with him and someone else who are going out there.
That's so sweet.
That's so nice. I couldn't, because it was I would have missed the show yesterday. Yes. And I can't miss the show.
Did you see how sunny and beautiful it looked
I
over
know.
There?
We maybe should have gone. But I thought that was really nice of John Lovick. A really so nice sweet. Gesture for him to say, even though we disagree on a lot, that we had a lot to do with getting the bill to at least where it was. That was really nice. Okay, now let me continue on with my issues with Governor Jay Inslee. Sitting there, oh, for the love of God, with cops behind him, I have to believe that some of those law enforcement officers were like, save me from this photo op. Save me from this photo op. The governor told a story about an officer who'd lateraled to Washington State to work here from another agency. And something about the story just struck me. Listen.
I remember talking to this trainer when I was at the facility over in the West Side. And he said that he used to be in the Las Vegas Police Department. And he said, I used to get in a fight every week. And then I came up here and got trained in the Washington way of doing business, which is to try to de-escalate things as far as humanly possible while you're protecting yourself and the community. And I've been on maybe one fight since I've been in the state of Washington. It is that kind of training that reduces violence and protects officers so that they can go home to their families.
Okay, a couple things. First of all, the dude worked in Vegas, okay? Have you ever been to Vegas? I don't think it's much of a surprise that he got into more fights with people in Las Vegas. A lot of drunks in Vegas. So that's just weird. But on a more serious note, here you have the governor of our state complimenting the exemplary training that we have for law enforcement in the state of Washington. And that has been one of the key arguments for undoing the disastrous police pursuit policy. Because when the police pursuit policy was passed in 2021 that dramatically limited the ability of police to decide in the moment to pursue a potentially dangerous criminal, what that law, what that bill passed by Democrats, signed by the governor in 2021, told me is they had no faith in the training of our law enforcement officers in this state for them to make the best decision in the moment, the decision that was in the best interest of public safety. That's what that told me in 2021. So to have the governor a couple years later, who signed that bill, now talking about just how stellar law enforcement training is in Washington, it has not changed markedly since you signed that bill in 2021. And so either you think we have well-trained officers who are equipped to make decisions about public safety, what's best for public safety in the moment, or you don't. So it's incredibly hypocritical. The governor goes on to talk about police defunding. And I'm going to play the clip, but for the love of God, what he's saying in this clip would have been much more impactful had he said it 3 years ago. Listen.
We need more law enforcement officers on the street in the state of Washington, and we are going to get them. These folks deserve backup. Our cities all have shortfalls in police officers, and we want to do everything we can, not to defund police, not to detrain them, but to fund them and train them, and that's what we're doing here today.
Oh, for the love of God. First of all, what is detrain them? How do you detrain police? That makes no sense. But the governor, the first time the governor commented on police defunding and his position on it was last year. During the whole debacle in 2020, the defund the police movement, do you think the governor, the standard bearer of the Democratic Party in Washington State, came out and said to the city of Seattle, like, hey, guys, that's not a good idea. We need more police officers. I value them. No, he didn't have anything to say about it. except to buy into this narrative that police are inherently racist. The difference the governor could have made in 2020, had he stood up for police, had he not claimed he didn't know about CHOP, and had he came out forcefully about what was happening in the city of Seattle, about the vilification of then police chief Carmen Best, scaring her out of town. Had he said something then, think about how different things could be. Instead, we have the lowest number of police officers per capita in the entire country. Seattle's police force has been depleted by like 30%. And the governor's there saying, we want more police officers to come to our state. I don't know if you understand how difficult of a task that is for law enforcement agencies in Washington to convince police officers to come here in this political environment. I'm sorry, Governor, it's going to take more than you doing a 180 overnight on this issue and all of a sudden saying, hey, I've got police officers standing behind me. Come to Washington. I like the police, when your track record has shown that you don't. And the same is true, by the way, for Bob Ferguson, who is the heir apparent to the governor. And we'll get to that in a moment because, well, actually, let's just play it now. Of course, Jay Inslee's sitting there. And he's got to give a shout out to Bob Ferguson, who's all but, you know, 4 days into his campaign to be the next governor.
I want to thank our Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who's done such great work. Bob, you don't get to give this speech quite yet, but in any event, I want to thank you for your leadership on that.
On this what? Effort. On what? On what? What has Bob Ferguson done for law enforcement in this state? What has he done? And I'm sorry, but it is so transparent to have Governor Jay Inslee 4 days, 3 days at that point, into Bob Ferguson's exploratory campaign for governor, just finding a way to fit him into the press conference and to thank him. Bob Ferguson has done nothing for law enforcement in this state. And the same sentiment that I explained about Governor Inslee earlier, saying nothing in 2020 when it mattered the most, Bob Ferguson didn't say jack either. And now he's going to jump on the back of the blue bandwagon because now it's politically palatable. Now that crime rates are so high and now that our police forces are absolutely decimated. And look, anyone who wants to change their mind and sing a new tune on such a critical issue, I welcome it. Great. If you want to all of a sudden be supportive of law enforcement, supportive of hiring more police officers, I welcome it. But it doesn't have to mean that we trust you on the issue. I don't trust that the next time there's a controversial issue involving police, whether it's in Washington or halfway across the country, that you're not all of a sudden going to change your tune, and vilify the police again. You cannot be trusted to have their back. You know, for those of us who support law enforcement, that support has never been unwavering and unflinching. There are, of course, bad police officers, just like there are bad podcasters, bad politicians, bad anything. And of course, police need to be held to the highest possible standard. They have a badge and a gun, and the law allows them to take human life. That's significant. And what I don't understand is someone like Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson, who, depending on the political winds of the day, either want to wholesale vilify law enforcement or act like law enforcement is our best friend. It's really quite disgusting to me, and I'm disgusted in advance of Bob Ferguson's 18-month gubernatorial campaign, where he is going to gaslight everyone into believing that he always cared about public safety, he always cared about the police, the media is not going to challenge him on it. You know, he's going to talk about the retail theft task force that his office launched a year and a half too late, after he didn't say anything about all the businesses that were looted in downtown Seattle in 2020. You think he came out, the chief law enforcer in the state, and said, hey, what's happening in Seattle needs to stop. You shouldn't be lighting police cars on fire. You shouldn't be looting struggling businesses already hurting from the pandemic. No, he didn't say any of that because it's not politically palatable. It wasn't politically palatable at the time for the progressives in his party. It's so transparent. There's so much hypocrisy there. So look, Bob Ferguson, if you are the next governor and you suddenly want to be a friend of law enforcement and supportive of them, fine. But there's a big segment of us who will not forget that you were not supportive of them when they needed it the most. And it has contributed to the degradation of law and order in our state. You bear some of the responsibility for that. You have a lot of influence in the Democratic Party. It would have taken one freaking press conference from you, one press conference during 2020, for you to stand up against the fringe of your party and say, look, we can't do this. This isn't good for the state. But you didn't have the courage to do it. I won't forget. People who watch this show won't forget. And law enforcement won't forget. All right, speaking of the governor's race, I saw a really interesting tweet from our friend Drew Mickelson over at King 5 about a potential candidate. Now, when the 2020 race for governor happened, at the time, I said I think the only person who could have won against Jay Inslee, given his weakened state with the pandemic and everything going on, was former Congressman Dave Reichert, also the former King County Sheriff. I thought he was the only one with the level of name recognition and respect among moderates and independents who would have actually had a chance to win. So it's why it was very intriguing to see this tweet from Drew Mickelson, who covers politics closely in Washington. He said he was checking in with possible candidates. He said, what about former King County Sheriff and Congressman Dave Reichert as the GOP's 2024 gubernatorial candidate? He says Reichert told him, quote, never say never. Dave Reichert, do I have to get on my knees and beg? Is that inappropriate? Because I will. What is it going to take? I like Dave. You know, Dave left Congress, and he and I did an interview at the time, and he was really sickened with the state of political discourse. And that was around the same time I was becoming very sickened with the state of political discourse. And at the time, you know, he wanted to spend time with his family, be a grandpa, et cetera. And so when 2020 rolled around, he just left Congress, and I kind of understood, okay, he left to spend more time with his family. Maybe launching a gubernatorial campaign isn't in the best interest for him, but you've had some time now, Dave. You've had some time now, you know, to travel, to spend time with your grandkids, et cetera. The state needs you. I really think that that might be the only Republican who could win. I genuinely think so. So I hope that that's, if you're teasing us, Dave, with that BS, never say never. Oh, I got to call Dave Reichert, Nicole. We need to invite him on the show. You on it?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. I could have put this next one in unbelievable, but I had a different segment for unbelievable today. So we'll just drop it right here. I saw this story from Cairo 7 talking about a pothole. Yeah. Okay. Before we show you the picture, a pothole. That is on an on-ramp from State Route 99 off the West Seattle Bridge onto State Route 99, right. Okay? Thinking that it was closed because they were needing to assess and repair a pothole. Well, if you've seen the picture of this thing, this is not a pothole. It's a crater.
And this is the first picture because it is now that entire square. Well, because they were able to chip away at it. But that's how dangerous it could have been.
I mean, first of all, that's, if you're not watching and you're listening, this is a picture that Cairo 7 posted from the bottom of the on-ramp looking up, and you can see straight through it to the sky. Mm-hmm. And it's a hole in the bridge, a hole in the on-ramp. And they're calling it a pothole. And I'm like, dude, that ain't no pothole. But also, first of all, that really leads me to question the structural integrity of that on-ramp. If a quote-unquote pothole could leave a full-fledged hole that you can see through, and it's like up in the air. So it's like, hey, you could get a PT Cruiser through that thing.
Well, and that had to, the concrete had to be dropping on something below it, like wherever right. That picture's being taken.
And it's like,
that seems dangerous.
We have such a big operating budget for Seattle government, King County, state government. How does a pothole get that bad? Where it becomes just a full-fledged wormhole to another universe.
The city is literally falling apart.
It's genuinely falling apart, but I just had to laugh at, you know, Cairo 7 called it a massive pothole. At least there was the qualifier that it was massive. It's just a hole. You know how long that had to go untreated to become a hole in the road?
Yeah.
It's not like one car hits it and it's like, oh, hole.
Hey, and don't they
human being fall down that thing?
Don't they inspect those fairly often? I thought, shouldn't you be inspecting it more often? Apparently,
certainly doesn't give you much confidence in government. that it could get to that extent. I mean, basic infrastructure. So that is not a pothole, my friend. Like I said, that's a black hole to hell, to another planet. Oh, good times. Okay. Are you contemplating getting new insurance or getting kind of an assessment of where your insurance is at? I've been telling you guys on the podcast that I took the First Mark Challenge. I listened to my friend Dory Monson on the radio talk for years about the First Mark Challenge and about how much money it saved him and how much better his insurance was. I was just went over to Chi Radio the other day. Actually, Brock Heward and I did a little segment for First Mark Insurance because Brock Heward also uses First Mark. Well, I am now officially, after taking the First Mark Challenge, I am a member of the First Mark family. And it was such a cool process because they work for you. So they don't work for the insurance company. So it's like a concierge where they're going through everything you have, everything you need covered, and seeing where your current policies stack up to what they could get you. And Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says after you go through the First Mark Challenge, it's very possible, and it's happened, that at the end of it, they just tell you that you ought to stick with your current plan. Here's Dave.
Sometimes those findings may lead to a recommendation to stay with your current provider for the time being and just make a few changes to your coverage. Most often though, we will be able to find you a better option and our recommendation will be to move from your current carrier over to First Mark.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Mike and I. Mike and I got off our first meeting. Dave Taylor's actually coming over to the studio after the show today. We're going to hang out. But after Mike and I got off the first call with them for the First Mark Challenge, we both looked at each other. We're like, Dave's so nice. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to have him as a sponsor because he's just the nicest person. But we also were able to get, Mike and I were woefully underinsured, which was scary because we work hard for what we have and the thought of something happening and then us losing it is terrifying. So we were able to up our insurance coverage for about the same price as we were paying for our lousy insurance before. So it ended up being great for us. So take the First Mark Challenge. It doesn't cost you anything, just a little bit of time to go through what you have and what you need. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. That's firstmarkinsurance.com. And there's a little tab that says take the First Mark Challenge. So check it out. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right. We talked on the show the other day about how ridiculous things are in Portland. We had on Kristen Olson, who's the host of the Rational in Portland podcast. We talked about this bill that was introduced, which is officially dead, by the way. They canceled a hearing that was scheduled on it that would have allowed homeless people to sue you if you tell them to move their tents, essentially, like wild stuff. Which is why it was very shocking to me to see a tweet come out about Portland being one of the top tourist destinations in the country, one of the top recommended destinations for tourists in the country. So this was from Forbes, and the headline from Forbes was the best places to travel in the U.S. in 2023, according to the experts. Wow, the word experts is doing a lot of work there. So apparently they reached out to individual travel experts, like basically bloggers, to say, hey, where do you think is the top place to travel in the United States for 2023? And then they each got off their own individual opinions. And one of them, a woman named Kay Kingsman, who is a travel writer and blogger at The Awkward Traveler, okay, says that Portland, Oregon is her top choice for where to travel this year. And I couldn't help but wonder, well, what is informing this opinion of hers? And I gotta be honest, it's not a surprise. So she alludes to Portland's foodiness or whatever, all the places. But let me particularly read two passages. I wanna point out two passages where she talks about the food scene and what else you can do. She writes, one especially exciting trait of Portland's new trajectory is how many of the new and rising businesses are owned and operated by BIPOC and LGBTQA+ trailblazers. And then when she's moving on to what else you can do besides eat, she says, how do you fill your time between meals? Quote, get active at a few of the new inclusive fitness studios. So basically, her rationale for Portland being one of the top places that you should visit in 2023 is that you have, is based off the skin color of business owners and whether you as a member of the LGBTQA plus community might feel active or might feel accepted at a gym. So again, based on what she wrote, not a surprise to me that she would call Portland one of the best places to visit in 2023. But what was pretty shocking to me. So Portland's mayor, of course, who's to blame for a lot of the downfall, although he's trying to rehab his own image too. Portland's mayor sent out a tweet. And I don't blame him. Look, he's the mayor of Portland and somebody says his city is worth visiting. So he sends out a tweet. Nicole, can you pull up that tweet for me? I got to read it off the thing. He sends out a tweet saying, "Thank you, Forbes, for naming PDX as best travel destination." And then he quotes from it because this lady wrote, "Like a phoenix from the ashes, Portland, Oregon is reemerging in 2023 with unprecedented growth in the food and beverage scene," which I think like rising from the ashes of what? The 2020 riots? What are you rising from the ashes of? So not a surprise that Ted Wheeler, who wants to rehab his own image and rehab the image of his city, would glob onto some weird Forbes recommendation to visit Portland and would share this glowing review. What did surprise me, however, and what is truly unbelievable, is that you have news agencies in Portland that uncritically are just sharing this as if it is anywhere within the realm of reason that Portland would be a hot destination for U.S. travelers in 2023. So this article is from KATU in Portland. And again, totally uncritical. The headline, "Portland makes list of best U.S. travel destinations." And it quotes, "like a phoenix from the ashes." And it goes on to just talk about this Forbes article and what Ted Wheeler said. But nowhere in here do they think to mention the crime in Portland, legitimate reasons why someone might not want to visit Portland right now, the homeless crisis being completely out of control, major shops closing up in downtown Portland because the crime issue is so bad. You would think that a news entity, an agency that's primary mission is to inform the public, would do more than just share a glowing headline from some random travel expert who cares about the skin color and the sexual orientation of the people who cook her food. And you think a news outlet would do a little due diligence and say, hey, you know, Portland's been having X, Y, and Z challenges that are real, but this one food and travel blogger thinks that it's worth visiting in 2023, and here's what the mayor had to say about it. A little bit of pushback to the idea that Portland would even be considered a good or safe place for people to travel. But apparently that is just too much to expect.
Inslee actually did the same media. Thing last week. But
oh,
at least
of course
there was
of course he did.
Yeah, I think that Washington made like fourth best state to live in based on a bunch of economics mostly and things like that. But the way that they get that, the way that they rank them is not, it's not really ideal. And it's not based off of crime much. And it's not taking into account, you know, you're averaging all of the cities. So,
right.
Yeah, if you average all of these safe cities against Seattle, then, yeah.
It's
anyway,
not 100%.
You can come up with that. But that at least has data backing it up
right.
to some extent.
It's how you interpret the data, though, right?
Yes, it's manipulating the data.
Yeah.
But this is no data. It's just one person's opinion.
One blogger.
And they're treating it as news.
Her blog is The Awkward Traveler. Like, what an awkward recommendation. But again, you don't, as KATU, and I think that's just like the state of local news,
right.
pick that up and be like, Portland's rising from the ashes like a phoenix. That's so sad. It's not. But you can find, and this is why, you know, the Wallet Hub surveys and AAA, which will put out travel destination stuff. Like, I understand some of them are based on statistics, but it's usually very narrow cast statistics that you're extrapolating a lot from when it means very little. You can find a study or survey to tell you just about anything you want to hear.
Anything.
For instance, coffee. I could find a survey that says coffee is going to make me live to 150 or a survey that says coffee is going to give me cancer.
Right.
Like, I just got to go looking for it.
Right.
So anyway, KATU, I know local news is challenged news. Right now. You got to do better than that. Okay, sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. I want to tell you about another one of our awesome sponsors to the podcast. Are you in the market to sell your home or you're considering it? A couple things. If you go to sellwithwest.com, there is a handy little calculator that you can go to figure out what your home is worth right now. It might be more than you think. And while you're there, you can read up on Wes Jones & Associates and our friend Wes Jones about their innovative marketing strategy to try to get the most possible eyeballs on your listing to get you the best possible reasonable price with the fewest contingencies. And if you feel like you need a little more advice on, is now the best time to sell my home? Should I wait a few months? What is the state of the market? I had Wes Jones in a couple weeks ago and we talked about that because I asked him like, you know, the market has been a little wibbly wobbly. Nicole, what is the phrase I'm looking for?
Unsteady.
Okay. That's more professional than I care to be today. So I asked him, you know, what about people who are skeptical or unsure if now is the right time to lose their home?
What I know right now is that today it's a pretty solid time. If you are listed on the market, you are likely to be one of the only homes for sale in your neighborhood. And that is a fantastic position to be in. Where are we at in 3 or 4 months? Well, if interest rates go up, buyers have less purchasing power and homes will probably take longer, which means that you will likely be competing against more of your neighbors.
Yeah. And the good thing is Wes Jones will give you his honest assessment of the market, of your home's value, and of what they can do for you and whether it's the best time. So visit our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Wiggly wobbly. What is the word? Some days wobbly. I really can't think. Wobbly.
Wobbly works.
Unsteady was much more professional. Maybe you should do these spots, Nicole. All right, let's dip outside of Washington State for just a moment. I don't know if you guys, so the border situation is an absolute disaster. I mean, I've been watching the videos and no channel, no network can hide it now because there is such an influx of migrants coming to the southern border. And I don't know if you've read this, but the White House is now going to send National Guard troops to the southern border. The headline from the New York Times, Biden to send 1,500 active duty troops to the southern border. The easing of COVID era restrictions could lead to an increase in migrants, which is an absolutely terrifying prospect. So basically, there's a court ordered lifting of Title 42, which was the public health rule that allowed them to more easily expel some migrants who came up to the southern border. But now that's going away. And look, I'll say it. There are a lot of Republicans who disagree with me on this, but I think ending Title 42 is the right thing to do because it was put in place because of the pandemic. And you can't, you know, talk out of both sides of your mouth and say, hey, stop continuing these COVID mandates and rules for so long when we're not in the pandemic, but then say, oh, accept Title 42. I understand that it's helpful for the situation at the southern border, but that's an abuse of power to continue something that was meant for the pandemic in a pandemic that's no longer a threat to the country. So anyway, Title 42 is ending. It's already been a mess. So obviously there's this huge concern that it's going to get even worse when they lack this tool to be able to expel people from the country more quickly. So anyway, I find it borderline hilarious, and I just am going to laugh so I don't cry, that Biden is now acknowledging things are so bad, he needs to send National Guard troops to the southern border. And why I think that is hilarious is just a couple weeks ago, do you remember what the DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said when testifying before Congress?
It is my testimony that the border is secure.
If the border is secure, then why do you need National Guard troops to the border? If the border is secure, that guy is absolutely unbelievable because he's doing it because he serves at the pleasure of the president. And he's like, well, I can't say that the border's not secure. I don't want to lose my job, when he should be standing up for the rank and file and actually telling the truth about what's happening and begging Congress and begging Democrats and Republicans and the president for more help. I also have to laugh on the heels of this announcement that National Guard troops will be heading to the border. I'm reminded of the clip we played just yesterday where Fox News' Peter Doocy is asking Karine Jean-Pierre a legitimate question about her claiming that there's been such a decrease in illegal migration and her getting incredibly defensive about it as if the southern border is not an issue.
When it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%. Where did that number come from?
It was, I was speaking.
CBP is telling us the number is.
I hear you. I'm about to answer.
136,000 people more.
I'm about to answer you. If the dramatics could come down just a little bit.
What's dramatic about asking a question about?
Okay, I'm going to answer.
So condescending. Again, you have Alejandro Mayorkas and even Biden and Kamala Harris at times. You have the White House press secretary, who have been so dismissive of claims about how bad things are at the southern border, to the point where Karine Jean-Pierre is being that condescending to Peter Doocy for even asking a question about it. And now we have the news that things are indeed so bad that Biden is sending National Guard troops to the southern border as Title 42 comes to an end. They know it's a train wreck down there. And they know that that train wreck is going to be much, much worse. And had they just acknowledged, and this is what one of the many things that bothers me, is because it's not a political victory for them, because it hurts them politically to acknowledge how bad things are at the southern border, they ignore it, they downplay, they dismiss, they deflect, instead of just saying, yeah, this is a disaster, we're going to buckle down, we're going to do something about it, we're going to send National Guard troops, we're going to help these border states get things under control. That's what's wrong with politics, is you don't want to have to take accountability or responsibility for a problem, and so you dismiss it and downplay it, and behind the scenes, do things to try to address it. I'm sorry, but if you're the president or a governor or a mayor, everything that's happening in your jurisdiction, so to speak, is your problem. And you are to blame for it. If you don't want blame, then don't ask for the job. If you don't want blame, then don't ask for the job. It is Thursday. That means it's time to check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. And this week, Florida, the legislature down there, just continues to crank out bills that are truly, truly the antithesis of bills that have been passed and introduced in Washington State. So let's get to our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
There were some interesting stories out of Florida because they just... They relate to Washington State so much. And this first one, in the sense that it's the complete opposite of what's happening here. So Republicans are in control of the legislature in Florida. And they've passed a couple bills that have to do with diversity and gender. Go ahead.
Correct. On Wednesday, the Florida Republicans approved a bill to ban diversity programs in colleges and also prevent students and teachers from being required to use pronouns that don't correspond to someone's sex.
Yeah, interesting. So a couple different thoughts on those. On the diversity programs, I think diversity programs have gotten completely out of control, and they amount to racism against whites and Asians, by the way. So no issues with that. But I still, on this second one, I really struggle with it, I guess. I feel like Ron DeSantis and some Republican states are doing too much. Am I wrong to feel that way?
No, I agree with you a little bit there too. I mean, something like pronouns in schools to me kind of comes down to like, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And also just be polite and be kind to people around you and do your best to make people feel comfortable. You know, I mean, I guess making sure that people aren't going to wind up in a civil suit because they're not using a pronoun is maybe what this is for, you know, to stop schools from, you know, maybe a teacher just cannot get on board with it and they just really like struggle with using a student's pronouns. And then that student wants to like take the school to court. I think that this is kind of to protect those scenarios from happening, but it does feel a little bit of an overreach.
Well, I kind of wonder if it's, I criticize Democrats in Washington State a lot for passing bills that are solutions in search of a problem. And I kind of wonder how often it's coming up that like, are teachers being fired for not using the right gender pronouns? You know, I don't doubt that that's a difficult situation for teachers to be in. And I certainly don't want teachers or students like bullying someone, right? But I think you're right. It comes down to like, people should be good humans. And if not, then they're just a bad human and you just deal with that. And I'm not sure that the government has to regulate that. And I'm not saying you're a bad human if you mispronoun someone. Yeah. I mean, if you do it like aggressively to make them feel bad, then maybe.
Yeah. And how do you also enforce something like that too? Like, how do you decide whether somebody's purposely doing it to be rude or whether somebody's just struggling with the change of English in general to new pronouns? Because, you know, I consider myself to be very much an ally and I always want to make people feel comfortable. And if I'm asked to address somebody a specific way, I'm absolutely going to do my best to do that. But like, forgive me if I mess up, you know, like right. Correct me and let's move on. I don't know if it has to take up legislative hours and taxpayer dollars to discuss something like that.
Yeah, like I certainly don't think there should be a bill requiring, mandating anyone to use someone's preferred gender pronouns in schools. That would be government overreach. But I also wonder if this is just too far in the other direction. And I'm starting to feel that way about a lot of what's happening in states like Florida. Because again, we talked about this last Thursday, I think. It's this, are you limited government or not? Are you limited government intrusion in someone's life or are you not? And this is kind of crossing a fine line.
It does. And sometimes when we like talk about Florida being the free state and I go and I'm looking through articles and I'm like, a lot of these articles are about like new restrictions and new this and that, new rules. I'm like, so Florida is a free state in a lot of ways, but in other ways, it's getting a little bit like those lines are getting blurred. A little.
100%. And again, it wouldn't be a free state if you required someone to use the gender pronouns, but I just don't think you need a law around it. I think you just deal with people. Like, people are always going to be, you know, jerks, and it is what it is. But the idea that we've, as a society, come to a place where it's like, if you don't use my gender pronouns, you're attacking me. And Florida feels like it has to legislate that away.
Yeah.
It's just all very exhausting.
It's true.
This other story you have today is interesting because it's actually a relevant issue in Washington state. We've had some challenges with foreign land and home acquisitions in Washington state. That have, you know, for instance, in the home front, that have driven up the cost of homes at times, you know, and we have a lot of farmland. So it's a concern about a country like China coming in and scooping up a bunch of land. And what do you do about that? And you guys are having a similar issue in Florida, and there is now an effort to do something about it.
There is. There's a bill restricting Chinese from buying Florida land, and it just passed the House. SB 264 would limit land purchases near military bases and critical infrastructure from residents of a handful of foreign adversaries like Russia, Iran, North Korea, and Venezuela. But Chinese citizens would be prohibited from owning land or homes anywhere in the state under this bill. And I was kind of looking a little bit more into it, and it seems to be somewhat bipartisan. There was a lot of Democrats that also voted for this. And there's some verbiage changes to it before it goes back to the Senate, but the Senate had already, before they changed some of the wording, had already passed it. So I'm assuming that this is going to get passed again.
Interesting because some people say that this is basically discriminatory against the Chinese. And there were some Chinese Americans who were protesting outside the Capitol. But again, if you're a Chinese American, it doesn't sound like this would apply to you. It's somebody whose primary residence is in China and they're not a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident. And I'm actually in favor of this because that is a foreign power that is, in a lot of ways, working against the interests of the United States. And so the idea that we would openly allow Chinese nationals to buy land near military bases or critical infrastructure, that seems irresponsible to me. But again, if you're, and I get that there's probably some individual cases where it's like you've got a Chinese national who, maybe they have a family in Florida and they want to buy a vacation house. And then they're like, well, I can't. So I wonder if there could be some carve outs that would make sense that wasn't such a blunt instrument.
Yeah. So there was, you know, this article I'm referring to, there was a couple incidences where they had to like look up some addresses of some Chinese nationals that own land here. And they happen to be professors at universities. So they're, and, you know, medical staff. So there's absolutely going to be some gray area they need to like fine line. And I'm also thinking like, who enforces this? Are you going to leave it up to realtors to draw that line with Chinese nationals? Like, because to me that leads to a whole bunch of also like possible discriminatory issues. So I really don't know who's going to back up the realtors in that sense, or who's the front line of that fight? You know, is it a realtor? Is it the banks writing mortgages? Like, who is it that's going to make that bring up the question of, can we sell these people this land or house?
Yeah, well, it probably comes into the financial aspect of it, and where is your address and how do you verify, et cetera. But I thought one of the things that was interesting is, as you mentioned, Democrats in Florida were kind of divided on this issue, and people who were opposed to it, some of them were being accused of conspiring with the Chinese Communist Party. So it's just like, you know, always assigning the worst of intentions to people. I think you can have some legitimate concerns about this bill, but I understand it fully as long as you have the right carve outs. Interesting stuff this week, Miranda. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
always enjoy chatting with Miranda about what's happening in Florida. It's nice to escape the bubble that is Washington State and see what's happening elsewhere, where the policies and politicians are a lot different. Okay, before we get to your Q&A comments on today's show, I just want to tease a conference that I'm going to be at this weekend. It is the Cascade Conference, the 2023 Cascade Conference, which is hosted by the mainstream Republicans of Washington, so the more moderate Republican group in Washington State. And it's happening in Leavenworth. I actually was the keynote at this conference last year, and it's such a good event. First of all, because you're in Leavenworth. Who doesn't like being in Leavenworth? But also, it's just people who, you know, you hear from Democrats and Republicans and people who just want to find the most practical way to try to bring balance back to the state. And so on Saturday morning, I'm going to be speaking on a panel. Actually, my friend Jonathan Cho will be there with me, too, and some other folks about bringing balance to the news media and trying to make sure that, you know, Republicans are at least getting a fair shake. You know, it's not like you have to prioritize Republicans, but I think it's fair to say that the mainstream media ecosystem is unfair to Republicans and too fair often to Democrats. So again, if you would like to check out the 2023 Cascade Conference, there is still time to register. Can you pull that back up, Nicole, so I can read the little, maybe you can see it, Nicole. Sorry, I don't have it right in front of me. What's the website they can go to register?
MrWalliance.com.
Wait, what? Oh no,
that's what it says.
MRW Alliance.
Mr.
Wow. Okay. MRWAlliance.com. Go to MRWAlliance.com. Mr. Alliance. That's what I get for asking you to do virtually anything at a moment's notice. Oh, anyway, you can still register. There's still time. And there are, of course, a lot of other great speakers at the event. I think Jamie Herrera Butler is going to be their keynote, which should be interesting to hear from her. All right, let's get to good one, Nicole. She's over there laughing. She doesn't want to be on camera. Mr. Walliance.org. You know, we're blonde. We do our best.
Okay. I control the camera over here.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, let's get to some of your comments on Inslee and, you know, his sudden appreciation of our men and women in uniform. Mugshot ESP it on YouTube says, it's ironic he mentions climbing Mount Everest and you don't do it in one leap. Let's talk about that initial policy. Oh my God, that's so spot on. So Inslee, as he's signing this police pursuit law, he says it's been like climbing Mount Everest and you do a little step at a time. And you make such a good point, because why didn't they take that under consideration when they passed the policy they passed in 2021 that didn't take it one step at a time, that went from allowing police to make these decisions agency to agency to outright being like, you can basically pursue no one at any time. Yeah, it's such a good point. That's why we read your comments, because oftentimes you have better points than I do. Why on Patreon says, I just cannot stand to listen to Inslee. None of his speech sounds sincere. And after what he and all the Democrats did against the police, no one wants to come here to be a police officer. And again, that's the issue, is you can try to reel it back in, but you can't do that overnight. And I don't think Inslee can do that at all. It's going to take someone brand new who has shown a proven commitment to respecting law enforcement. And again, that doesn't mean you don't want them held accountable, but appreciating the difficult job that they do. Nancy says of Bob Ferguson, as the chief law enforcement officer of the state, the rise in crime is his responsibility. And I agree. Again, we went back to what I said about Biden just a little bit ago. If you want to be president, if you want to be governor, you have to want to take blame for everyone, for everything, and be prepared to take blame for everything, because you've asked to be put in a position for things to be blamed on you. So that shouldn't come as a surprise to you, and you shouldn't try to deflect or defer blame to other people. That's not leadership. Aaron on Facebook says, Bob's leadership on all of the legal undermining over the past 12 years. Inslee just acknowledged it's all Bob's doing. You know, Bob has helped the state get away with a lot of stuff as the attorney general. Aaron says, Bob is the intelligent, strategic, dangerous player here. Oh, some comments on the pothole that is actually just a hole, a giant hole. Dano says the lack of maintenance on a state highway is probably because of Inslee's vaccine mandate, which led to not enough workers. Possible. Denise on Patreon says that Fox 13 is reporting that they inspect this on-ramp every 2 years. That ought to be enough to catch a pothole that's
I think about that's to not open very up. Often. 2 years? Eh. If you have one, you know, semi or just a big truck that takes out a chunk, I mean, you're waiting 2 years. What if it happens the week after the inspection? Then it's just chipping away.
I guess
every
maybe
day.
2 years isn't enough. I don't know. I don't know enough about road maintenance. I do know it should never get to the point where you have a Nicole-sized hole in the road. It's just that Brent, I don't mean that you're large. I just say a human-sized hole in the road. Sorry.
We need a dump button.
We do. You look great. You look great. I mean, I look great because of the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, which we got to get to our Eastside Weight Loss Clinic ad mm-hmm. before the end of the show. After this. Okay, let's read one more. Matthew Cook on the border. New motto for Undivided. We bring down the dramatics a bit. True.
That was clever.
That is very clever. Mm-hmm. Also, Brandy, is the members only live Q&A today in conflict with the Kraken playoff game? Yeah. Okay. I feel bad because I decided it was going to be tonight, and the plan is still to do it tonight, and you'll get a post after on Patreon Locals. But then everybody's like, there's a Kraken game, which I think is at 6:30.
I think so. I think Matt Gilbert just arrived in Dallas for it. So
is it 6:30 Pacific time?
No, yes, I believe
okay.
so.
So you guys tell me, because I'm open to the time. I'm either going to do it before the Kraken game. I'm thinking 5:30. 45 minutes, and then people can watch the Kraken game. Because I feel like if I try to schedule for after the Kraken game, that's too dang late. And God only knows how long they'll be out there on the ice.
I agree. I think that's good.
I've never done one at 5:30, so I realize that might be a little early for some. But usually I do them really late. So maybe it's nice to do one a little bit earlier for folks who have to go to bed early. We're going to do the live Q&A with subscribers tonight at 5:30. Okay. Now I expect you to come sober, stone cold sober, no pregame drinking. No, I'm just kidding. You can come not sober if you want to. I'll be sober though. All right. Speaking of being sober, I try not to drink sugary drinks because of the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I tried to find a transition.
That's pretty smooth.
Into it. You know, I still have a couple drinks now and then. You got to live your life, right?
Yes.
But you know, I don't drink maybe the frou-frou drinks I once did. On occasion. Anyway, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. I've lost 35 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. And so the results are enough to just keep me really focused on getting back to my pre-pandemic weight in time for my wedding. I had the weirdest dream about my wedding last night. I only brought a black bra. And you've seen my dress. And I only brought a black bra.
That was your dream.
Were racing around, me, you, my sister, trying to borrow someone else's tan bra at the wedding. And I was running late, and Mike's like, where is she? Anyway, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Visit the eastsideweightlossclinic.com. You can get a free 15-minute consultation. Nicole, you got to put up the website.
Yes.
You can get a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan to find out if the program is right for you. And again, you can just do that consultation right online. It's super easy. You go to the website, you click free consultation, you tell them that you heard about them. We're off the rails today on the Undivided podcast. And you can see if it's right for you. I liked it. Obviously, I've lost 35 pounds. And I'm going to look good in my wedding dress, whether I'm wearing a black bra or not.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be considered stylish. Or no bra at all.
That's what I'm confused by.
More boob talk on the podcast. Okay. Let's just get to our sanity check. We got to get to the end of the show today. Real struggle. Okay. I, as you guys know, on the show multiple times this week, I have pointed out Bob's very fake exploratory campaign for governor. There is no such thing as an exploratory campaign under Washington State's campaign finance laws. You're either a candidate or you're not a candidate. So Bob might be exploring in his own brain, but as far as the law and the state and the PDC are concerned, he is a candidate for governor. Here's a little clip of a segment I did earlier this week. Bob, it's okay to want to run for governor. You're the attorney general. You're perfectly qualified as far as, you know, on paper to run for governor. You've been contemplating it not so secretly for years. You don't have to call it an exploratory campaign. No such thing exists. Just say you want to run for governor and go out and try to earn people's votes. That's fine. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Still laughing about your website fail. And Bob is continuing his exploratory campaign. He sent out a tweet of himself over in the Tri-Cities, shaking hands, kissing babies, I don't know if he kissed any babies, but if there was a baby there, he kissed it. He said, kicking off the exploratory campaign with our first event in the Tri-Cities, I'm proud to have the endorsement of UA Local 598 Hanford workers. I'll be traveling to every corner of the state, which is only four. The state has four corners, right? To hear your concerns and your big ideas. Wow, you would think we're drunk today. We're not. Now, I got some angry responses to the segments I've done pointing out that this is an exploratory campaign that doesn't exist. And I heard from some probably leftists on Twitter who are like, you're focusing on that too much. It's a non-issue. It's a non-story. And I reject that. And here's why I think it's a big deal. It's dishonest. It's not intellectually honest for him to suggest that he's just exploring the possibility of running for governor. It is a campaign. And I don't know where along the line we became okay with politicians being misleading, being disingenuous with us. It is not an exploratory campaign. That doesn't exist. He's running for governor. He released something with a list of more than 150 endorsements when he was reaching out to folks. And I know because some people shared text messages with me when he was reaching out to folks to ask if he could, or his campaign was, if he could film part of his campaign video on their property or at their place of business. They said it was for his campaign for governor. It's not an exploratory campaign. So it's not some little piece of minutia. It says more about Bob Ferguson, that he can't just be intellectually honest. He's trying to come across as humble. He's been wanting to run for governor for years. It's a campaign for governor. And my argument is he ought to just call it as much. So I will continue to harp on the fake exploratory aspect of his campaign until he drops the facade and just acknowledges that he is indeed running for governor. And that has been today's Sanity Check. And that has been Undivided for today, this Thursday, our last live show of the week. As a reminder, Andrew Yang is joining us in studio for Sundays with Subscribers. So make sure if you haven't already, you become a subscriber to the show. We have awesome in-depth conversations on fascinating topics on the Sunday show. Everything from the environment to with Andrew. We'll talk about the state of the two-party system. So you can sign up to become a subscriber for as little as $5 a month at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. For those of you who are already subscribers, we will be doing our monthly live subscriber Q&A where you can ask me any dang thing you please tonight at 5:30 p.m. because we have to fit it in before the Kraken game. So for subscribers, I will see you then, and I will see you on Sunday for Sundays with Subscribers, and I'll see the rest of you back here Monday at noon.